Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello. And welcome to the Hossidathon, the podcast that gets to know the family of films from one of the world's greatest animation directors, Mamoru Hosoda. I'm Michael Leader.
And I'm Steph Watts, and we've seen the lot of them.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and the most important thing is communication.
So join us in our quest into the glorious world of Mamoru Hosoda. Jake, Steph, welcome back. We're in the depths of autumn going into winter here as we record. So time for some summer wars, obviously.
Yeah, it's very nice to be back in our lovely rhythm of just viewing and talking. And as I said last week, it's been a long while since we've settled into a proper kind of filmography. And it's just so nice to get back into that with you both.
You know, there is something nice and cosy, almost very fitting for this time of year. We're pulling on a nice fluffy jumper of a filmography and getting nice and warmed by Mamoru Hosoda and his lovely themes and collision between themes and high concept ideas. So we had The Girl Who Let Through Time last week, a slice of life coming of age teen drama that mixed in high concept time travel. And this week it's Summer Wars, where I think we're going to start taking flight in terms of the crazy concepts that he's throwing in. Steph, are you still along for the journey?
I'm still here. I'm ready to get into this one. Weird one because I remembered liking it more than I liked it rewatching it for the podcast. So I think it will be an interesting chat. But yeah, I guess we should start with some synopsis. Kenji is a shy 11th grade student when he's asked by the confident, older pupil Natsuki to take a summer job at her home. Upon arriving, he's shocked to learn that the job requires him to pose as Natsuki's fiancé. Their romance is interrupted, however, when Kenji receives a mysterious text message containing a mathematical problem. Being a maths whiz kid, Kenji can't resist solving it, but he soon realises disaster has struck. He has caused the seizure of a huge social networking site that is used by most of the world's businesses and services. It is now up to Kenji and his newly acquired family to put things right.
Thank you, Steph. So just from that description, there's stuff that we can already link back to The Girl Who Let Through Time. We've got this student having to deal with their personal problems, but also this high wire sci-fi concept that's exploding the world around them. Michael, what's happening with Hosoda that takes him from Girl Who Let Through Time to Summer Wars in those 3 years? What's going on?
So when we left him, Hosoda had this word of mouth sleeper hit success with The Girl Who Let Through Time, did well at the box office, won awards, acclaim. So Madhouse, the production company, the animation studio, said that he could make another film, and this time it would be a chance to do something original, based on an original story, unlike The Girl Who Let Through Time, which is based on a novel, pre-existing text. So Hosta says that Satoko Okudera, who wrote the script for The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, said that she rarely got to write action in her films. So he wanted his next film to have at least elements of action movies and action flavour. But they didn't want to do a traditional action film in either the Hollywood or the sort of live-action Japanese cinema or the anime moulds. So they had to commit it a different way. Here's a quote. "We asked ourselves, if there was a non-Hollywood, non-anime Japanese character who could save the world, who would it be? That's when the idea of a family popped into my..."
Lad has clearly not been watching the Fast and Furious films.
Fast and Furious ripped off him, I'm sure. But the family aspect was informed twofold. In one sense, by the fact that Satoko Okudera had recently had a child, and that Hosoda himself had recently got married, and he met his wife's family, which is like this large, close-knit, you know, family, sort of like the one we see in Summer Wars, compared to Hosta's own rather solitary upbringing. And he talks about the culture shock of meeting that family for the first time, and he wanted to capture that in this project. And then on top of all this, there's the matter of the online world that's, you know, on top of this family drama. They're developing this in 2006, which is around apparently the time when Second Life was all the rage in Japan. And Hosta was very inspired by the idea of online worlds and how the online space democratizes certain things. And he thought about when you're playing a video game, if you're fighting in a video game using avatars, then anyone could be a hero. Anyone could have that dexterity and acrobatics of an action hero. So he wanted to bring that in here, into here, with the sense of family, sense of unlikely heroes, sense of the online world. There were two big themes they kept repeating throughout production, apparently. Why are relatives sometimes annoying? And still, we often realise that strong bonds exist between us when something significant happens. So as previously mentioned, Satoko Okudera is back as the writer here, and I love this quote. I'm very indebted to a special booklet that comes with the recent Blu-ray releases of Summer Wars, which has lots of interviews and behind-the-scenes stuff, and this is a quote from her about working with Hosoda. "The average family saves the world. When you put it that way, it sounds absurd, but it's so like him to successfully develop the concept into a rich movie. During script meetings, he came up with one exceptional idea after another, and it was tough to keep up with him." So he really is this, like, this guy who starts with some very simple, maybe even one-line ideas, and then just piles ideas on top of that. Also returning for this film is the character designer Yoshiyuki Sadamoto, but here he's working alongside another character design team, Takashi Amina Okazaki, who worked on the characters inside the World of Oz, the social media world. And that style's quite distinctive, and Takashi Okazaki's work might look familiar if you've seen Afro Samurai, which was a manga that they created and then became this massive international thing because Samuel Jackson became involved and obsessed with it and sort of exec produced the anime, I believe. But this is something we might come back to in later episodes, and it starts here, I suppose, where Hosoda likes to mix up different creative teams when he's working on these stories with distinct planes of existence. So you have the reality and the online world. So you have production designer Anri Jojo, who's working specifically on the design world of Oz, animation director Tatsuzo Nishita, who's focusing on all the animation within that virtual world too, including specifically the fight sequences. And he says that he was very influenced by not only martial arts movies, but video games like Virtua Fighter. Very specific reference there, when there are perhaps more famous fighting games out there, but that's what he referenced. And then on the flip side, you had Hiroyuki Ayama directing animation for the real world side of the film, and you had art director Yoji Toshige too, who'd worked for years at Ghibli on the likes of Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke. So he was bringing some very Ghibli-esque backgrounds to the real world section, these like rolling green hills and blue skies, to contrast the big, colourful, cacophonous world of the online space. Summer Wars was released in August 2009 with a good deal of hype behind it off the back of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. It took home a bunch of awards, like The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, including Animation of the Year at Japanese Academy Awards, and the same prize again at the Mainichi Film Awards, as I mentioned last episode. So that's keeping this streak going, that he is winning the big awards, Hosoda, with his films. But this one also travels around the world, maybe in a way that Girl Who Leapt Through Time didn't. So it played at all sorts of festivals, including Locarno, which in Switzerland, which kind of has a reputation as being perhaps more of an art movie festival for some. But this is one of the first anime films, maybe even the first, I believe, to get this sort of rollout there. Plays in Sitges in Spain, the Berlinale in Germany, also comes to the UK and US, and it further cements this idea that this Hosoda guy is a filmmaker that works on an international stage and gets these international rollouts. So it just is one, the next jigsaw piece, so the next step in the journey that he makes to becoming an internationally renowned filmmaker. But of course, the most important thing is, how renowned is he among the three of us? So let's shuffle over to the review section, because I can't wait to hear, Jake, what you make of this one.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, Michael. So Steph has already kind of teed up a little bit, a little tease of what she was making of Summer Wars. And you said that you want to know what I'm thinking of this film. What do you think I'm thinking about this film?
What we think when we're thinking about what you're thinking about Summer Wars. ooh, interesting. I think, so you're a guy that sometimes likes rules, right?
I do like rules, yes. I like processes. So, yeah.
And I think that this is one where suddenly what the most interesting thing about this, I want to hear about your thoughts on, is the introduction of this online space, and you have, but you also love families, and particularly idiosyncratic families. Some of the relationships in here I can imagine you really vibing with. But then there's that connective tissue between what they're doing in the real world and the online world, which I think you might have some notes on. So I think this is, I'm feeling this is maybe a little mixed, but with some highlights within there.
I think that's good analysis. But I would say that you kind of swung a bit negative on it. I would, yes, the rules we'll get into, but I gotta say, I thought this was brilliant.
Hey.
Oh, I had such a great time with it. And so I'm really excited to talk with Steph about it. And I'm really intrigued to watch it again to see whether kind of just maybe the excitement of watching it the first time is what covers up the cracks a bit. And once you go back to it, maybe they reveal themselves a bit more. But so much that I really enjoyed about it. As you said, it's this family drama thing. It's this kind of My Fair Lady-esque classical Hollywood rom-com for a bit. For a good midsection of it, it's an amazing Roland Emmerich film. I think it's got really good values. I think like the utopian space that it imagines the internet could be is such a strong message. I think people that spend a lot of time on the internet, like we all do now, will kind of see themselves a lot in this. You get a lot of vindication through the events that's happening in the real world and how it ties itself to the internet world. I really, really liked it a lot. So I'm excited to talk about it. Steph, take me down a peg or two, though. So when I watch this for the second time, what am I going to be disappointed by?
Well, I don't want to kind of start too negatively, because I do think there's a lot of like really, really fun and kind of like really ambitious stuff in this. I think there's, he's clearly like building on Girl Who Leapt Through Time being this kind of smaller thing that has sci-fi elements. And this is like, yeah, there's just so much going on. But like, I mean, I guess to start at the start of the film, the thing I do really love is that like building of the internet space and this kind of, I guess, like idealized, like utopian vision of what the internet can be used for and that kind of social network space, like just the kind of, you know, you can game, you can see your friends, you can run all your businesses. Obviously, that kind of comes back to bite them later when they realize that if that goes down, they can't do anything in life without like this one kind of big social network system.
I think like this time period to be making this is so interesting because it's before total social media domination. And it's in that era where the online personality thing is Second Life. It's RuneScape. It's Club Penguin. It's these things where you are entering a world rather than trying to mirror reality in some way, which social networking, I suppose, is trying to do. And but there's so that we departed from that way of using the internet in a lot of ways. But that idea of like businesses and like governments existing online in that way is so true. Like, think of what happens when a few months ago Gmail just died and we couldn't access it, and like suddenly we can't do work. But you imagine that on a grand scale, of course that has a knock-on effect to so many things. And this obviously takes it to extreme lengths, but it's very, very true.
It kind of reminds me of, have you seen the like 80s film War Games? I think it had like Matthew Broderick in it. It's like a kind of more like advanced, like internet capable version of that, where it's like this guy accidentally starts nuclear war with Russia by like playing a game with like a really smart computer. It's like kind of giving me that vibe. But yeah, with that added thing of, you know, you can access the internet from your Nintendo DS or from your fridge or whatever. Like, it's kind of, it's got that weird, I guess that's where kind of the rules start to span out a little bit, where you kind of have, yeah, obviously you can access it from a computer, but then there's people with like Hosoda's favorite, the flip phone, kind of like doing all their stuff and like gaming with a couple of buttons and then doing something really complicated in the kind of world of Oz. I guess it doesn't fully link up.
We may be getting ahead of ourselves there, but I think that is something with me where I'm starting to question the film just a little bit. And I think it goes back to one of his goals that I just mentioned in the context, which was he really did see this as democratization of an action movie, not necessarily a sci-fi movie about a metaverse on an online world. So yeah, there's that bit where at the end they're on all their various devices furiously typing or whatever it is, and in the online world there is this fighting game happening. We will return to this as a tease Bell, he does return to a lot of these themes, but of course, a decade on, and with all the changes that we've had in that time, and it would be interesting to see what's different about that film compared to this one.
But yeah, but I mean, like, he's predicting the Nintendo Switch, you know? play with your friends, play it handheld, play it up on a big display.
It's very forward thinking, isn't it? I mean, it's easy to forget just how prevalent the online world was in 2006, 2009 when they were developing this. But some key things that happened during the development of this: the iPhone was only released in 2007. So when they started dreaming up this film, the iPhone wasn't out, hence the flip phones.
You know, but there is an iPhone in this.
Yeah.
There is an iPhone 3G. Phone, oh, yeah. My God. So lovely.
But
to see.
That's cutting edge when they're showing it in this film. But then also, yes, so much social media stuff, you know, it was only really in its early stages at this point. So really fascinating. And it's interesting that he returns to this later on. But we should probably break out the two aspects. And you do have this grounded real world thing, Jake, as you said, the family. Should we talk a little bit about that as well, and how we responded to those characters? Because that's something I watched this when it came out. I remember seeing there was a really fun old people would be able to set me right on this manga in the UK. Manga Entertainment did an outdoor big like outdoor screening of this, and I think it was at Canary Wharf in the sort of sunken like central square there. I think I saw it there, and it's just a really fun film, and it's one that is really dazzling. In those moments, but rewatching it now in that similar way, when sometimes there are aspects of films that are, you know, louder in the memory than others, big twists, big reveals, big moments. This is one where I mostly remembered the online world than the real world. So rewatching it reminded me of this almost Royal Tenenbaums, Wes Anderson, idiosyncratic family stuff. Really, I really loved that. All the characters they draw, and there are dozens of them. That stuff I really responded to. But Jake and Steph, what did you make of that side of the film?
I think it's so lovely. I made a reference to that quote about communication right up the top. And that is ultimately, to me, what this film is all about, whether that is in a virtual world or whether that is with your family. And I'm glad that it gets away from that kind of rom-com-y plot after about half an hour or so, and like everything's revealed that he's not her boyfriend or he's not her fiance, and suddenly everyone has to band together quickly, and you're kind of thrown in and forced to become a family altogether again. And it just allows for so many lovely interactions. And because we're in Japan for this, a lot of that happens around the dinner table, and you see like whether that is something really, really dramatic, which this film certainly can be, or whether it's really small gestures and emotions and people just kind of revealing themselves through the tiniest kind of movement, or whether it might be something a little bit creepy, like going to smell the bathwater of an empty bathroom that someone's just come out of. But I suppose actions like that, even if they are creepy, you do get a sense of the character. But I think when the film kind of enters its final third, I suppose, and the grandmother character, who's amazing, and like this is all kind of part of this amazing matriarchal family, which is again something you're not going to typically see in an action film, to be the central figure of the whole thing in a way. But after her demise, there is such beautiful framing of the family unit after a tragedy like that, and the way that people talk and the way that they come together, it's just given so much time and so much thought, and it is given as much space as this end of the world apocalypse stuff. Right? And I think the film, he is taking you on that journey to remind you that ultimately, whatever events are going on in the outside world or in your virtual world or in your family world, they are all of equal importance, and you don't need to kind of say that one has less value than another just because it might be not quote unquote real. And on that art side of things, so it was Yuji Takashigi, the art director, who was brought over from Ghibli. Absolutely could totally see it, especially from the beginning where it's like it's an escape to the country story, a classic Ghibli favorite. But the way that that brushes up against the internet side, I think, is really cool, because something that you just don't ever see in the real world at any point is a landscape that's just bright white like that in the virtual world. So that clash between them makes the internet world feel so dramatic and so exciting. And then in contrast, it makes the natural world feel so much more real and so beautiful. On both sides, very, very good.
Yeah, I agree that kind of in look, I think the two worlds like work really well together because there is that kind of that like contrast and the contradiction between them. And I think, like, again, as we've gone through time, like, I really like the character designs. I really like the, yeah, that kind of white void space in Oz. And kind of like that weird use of like 3D animation for some of that like more kind of technology side stuff. I think story-wise, I don't really agree that they're like given enough space. I think just because there is so much going on, like, I don't think there's as much time to breathe. I think all the characters are a lot more like broad and you don't really get those like little nuanced moments just because there are like so many characters. Like that bit where she introduces him to like all of the family and then later on there's like all the husbands as well that like haven't got there yet, and it's like, oh my god, how many characters are there in this thing? So I do think there's like maybe like I feel like I lost a bit of like the emotion and like the love for it just because I don't think there's really time to get to know anyone before there's that kind of the big final fight where everyone's like clicking on their screens and stuff. But I do think it's like a really interesting kind of experiment in that way, just because yeah, you do have like so many events, so many characters as part of it, and yeah, I mean, maybe that's just the chaos of a big family. I don't know, because I think a tiny family.
Michael, what you said about him arriving at his partner's family and the chaos of that, to me that makes so much sense, because I don't think it is this intimate portrait of people that is fully sketched in at every edge of the frame for them. It is this snapshot of family life, and if you come from a small family and you suddenly enter a large one, that can feel like there are some nuclear weapons and traffic jams and satellites being thrown at you, because suddenly you've got to deal with all these people and it's so intense, and sometimes you just need to kind of quietly shuffle off and game for a bit or something. But I totally got that emotion that he was trying to translate, and amazing that that's where it comes from. I can just imagine him turning up on Christmas Day at a Christmas party and just turning white, having to deal with all these people.
Yeah, he is Kenji, and he wants us to be in his shoes as well. And I think, not to be all, oh, it was intentional that the characters weren't as well drawn as you wanted them to be, but I think that is in part intentional, that you can't, when you're first introduced to all these characters, get your head around them, and it may take an hour of the film for you to tell all of the aunties and uncles apart. and then you'd start to define them just by their jobs and roles they have within the family. Like, oh, there's the one that's the, you know, the computer guy, and the one that has the yacht that he keeps talking about and all that. Do we want to shout out any members of the family we loved? Anyone that comes to mind?
I loved the uncle that had all the really good vests.
Oh, yeah.
He had like a Yamaha vest. He had like a really good yellow one at the start. He was great.
Is he the old bloke that in the end becomes almost like the sensei to his son, who's the
master?
I
quite like that resolution, that he had his moment at the end.
There's one chap, the most handsome of all the uncles, who arrives in the last act with a truck, and he's like almost got his like flipping up his shades moment where he says it's classified and looks into camera, and he's and you almost expect, like on Instagram, when like all the heart emojis just start fluttering out of someone's face. What a babe.
Yeah, interesting that the idea was a normal family saves the world when that guy turns up with like government equipment.
Yeah, I think there's clashes there in the inspiration, because yes, the normal family save the world is clearly pitched at this cross-generational appeal in terms of the audience, but I think the inspiration comes from the idea of these big sprawling families who maybe have a long history and are, you know, deeply ingrained in an area, as this family is. So it is more like a, as I say, Royal Tenenbaums, family of potential geniuses who maybe have fallen on hard times. But my favourite is the, I can't remember what generation she fits into, but the woman who's watching the baseball game all the way through. It's very sort of makes me think of family life, where there's somebody's always trying to get into the other room to watch some form of sports. Although, of course, it's because one of the family members is playing in that game.
So this is something that I really loved about, and this is what I mentioned about a really good Roland Emmerich film, would be kind of balancing these tiny things and cross-cutting so well between them and giving you that kind of same emotional hit from each of these different story beats. And so we've got this family life, and then what's giving you the, then you've got this kind of global threat narrative, but happening at the same time is the baseball game, and the baseball game is exactly mirroring what's going on in the global narrative. And then combined with all of that, you've got going on what's going in the virtual narrative as well, and just going all, but it just kind of keeps you going up, like all the way through it, just rising and rising. And I said about rhythm in The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, just how the way that, like, revisiting these moments over and over again and hiding stuff from you at specific moments to then make it pay off later. And I think that this is so smartly edited, which is not something we really think about with animation because it's so planned out in advance. But of course, like, the story editing, I think, is so smart.
Sorry, I'm just very happy that you're responding so strongly.
But that stuff I think is great. But then there's the same frustrations that I had with The Girl Who Leapt Through Time as well, of just this telling and not showing for things that could be easily shown, like the fact that we're told Kenji is a maths whiz, and that is so central to the plot. Like that, like the plot can't happen if he's not a math genius. We're never shown that in the first kind of 20 minutes or so when he's at school and working his way out to the country. And then this maths problem that comes in that kicks off the whole apocalypse, we're just shown some numbers on screen, and then we're not shown the scribbles that he's making. And then this inciting incident happens, but we have no connection to why that actually happened. And I think, like, that's something that's really annoying and stops you from actually making that connection to that character, to this event that they have caused, because we weren't involved in what that process actually was. And so we see it there. And then what's more frustrating, perhaps, is in the final act of the film, where we've got this big battle, which is all based around this card game that I'll ask either of you two. Any ideas how it's played?
No.
Nope. And I was wondering if it might be that, like, because we're not from Japan, we just don't understand what this game is. But then you have a shot earlier of Natsuki and the kind of the distant uncle playing the game, and then Kenji is watching along, like, what's going on? I can't even follow this game. So I'm assuming it's supposed to be, you know, a game that not everybody knows, but this one family is, like, really good at. I'm not 100% sure, but
yeah, I suppose, like, I mean, that'd be the kind of thing where you arrive, again, it's Christmas afternoon, everyone's a bit tired after their lunch, and someone says, let's play Articulate, and you've only arrived there on the day and you've never played it before. That kind of feeling. But when it's amplified to that grand scale of this mega boss final battle, it just kind of leaves the audience at a remove, which is a bit annoying. But I wonder whether it came from him, like, looking back at his Digimon times, because it's a very Digimon-type battle, which I'm sure we'll get to.
This was a development on from one of the spin-off sort of shorts that he made for Digimon, which probably... explains why there's that card game rule aspect there. It would be interesting, maybe at the end of this series we can go back and watch Digimon and see whether there's some extra clues there as to they can unlock these films. But it is, I suppose, that is another thing, like with The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, where there are these aspects of the story where by that point you're meant to be so sold on the momentum of the story and the emotional through line that there will be some aspect of the high concept narrative that you're just meant to just vibe along with, rather than fully understand. And that's why I do sometimes, I've said this in the context for both episodes, he just placed these high concepts on top of personal stories and darts between the two. And as Jake, you've very eloquently said there, how the connections between them in Summer Wars are quite strong, and you really can see the metaphor, but there are just points where it is just like sci-fi stuff is happening at this moment. Mm. And we're not going to really explain how they're going to beat the boss right now. We're not going to really explain why we need, because it's almost like proto NFT, isn't it, where they need more servers, but surely the social media world is online, so why do they need all these servers in the back room in order to beat the boss?
It's so, I love that. The fact that cooling a server down is a plot point for this is so good. I can imagine like the Reddit PC Master Race guys watching this and be like, this is my life, you know, this film gets me. But I think the film does such a great job at bringing real gravity to what like we would call internet problems, because of that, the way that the story is structured, like when you're getting those key problems inside Oz that are cut alongside Granny's death. Like you can't not be attached to it, because you're having to feel that emotion from one side of the story and that transports it to the other. Unlike, say, a Ready Player One, where you have absolutely no investment in the real world because it is so focused on, we got this virtual playground, we can do whatever we want in there. And I think by bringing, like having that real emotional focus on both sides, you give that validation to so many audiences about what they do on the internet.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to raise. And I do wonder, of course, the novel of Ready Player One is probably drawing from a very different world. But we do have these recent films in Western cinema that do have this online world, like Ready Player One or Space Jam 2, the film
that is Free Guy
haunting me, Free Guy as well. And it would be interesting to view those as almost post-Summer Wars films or post-Hosoda films. Like, what are they doing differently or similarly? And you're right, you know, Space Jam 2 doesn't have a real-world component. It almost entirely exists within the serververse, I think they call it. The hard drives at the heart of Warner Brothers Studios.
What's Don Cheadle's baddie called?
He's called... It's a pun on it's a pun on AI. Like
algorithm.
Algorithm. Yeah, algorithm. Yeah, that's
wow.
It. So it all exists within that IP universe, the metaverse there. Similarly to Ready Player One, Free Guy does try to have this online video game world and the offline world, but that doesn't really translate much to how we play video games. It just comes across like a reality TV show, like The Truman Show did. But Summer Wars, that's an interesting point of view on this film that shows it in a better light for me. I think actually that's a good point, Jane.
Well, and I think like it's really promoting, as we said, like it's promoting the idea of what the internet can be, and it made me think of like all the net neutrality stuff that was happening a few years ago about like the internet actually having to fight for itself and people having to like put a line in the sand about what they think the internet should be and make a vote on it. And I think it kind of makes you angry about what the internet has become and how corporate and governmental it all is. And I love like what this proposes, even if it doesn't really make sense, because it says like so many people are online on Oz, but when you actually go into Oz, it looks like there's maybe like 400 people. And also like say similar thing with Tales from Earthsea, where we kept getting told like how big this world is, but all the events actually only keep happening to about the same 10 people.
But it's funny, there's one aspect of the release of this film that I came across when I was doing this research for this episode. Apparently they screened this at MIT with a Q&A and a discussion afterwards. I'd love to know what they actually talked about, because that's one of those things where they just, you know, Hosoda isn't necessarily, he's not an engineer, he's not a mathematician or, you know, anything related to the internet, but he's clearly a speculative filmmaker, and I'd love to know what they were talking about there.
Oh man, I love just thinking of MIT, that after like decades and decades of generic American action films just labeling like the Russians or the Chinese or the Japanese or the North Koreans as the villains, that this film is just like, yep, the villains of the US military, you know. They just are, and I'm absolutely happy to agree with it, because generally in the real world they are anyway. But Michael, important thing that we haven't spoken about, and I don't know why it's taken this long. You are a enormous Beatles fan.
Yes.
Did you enjoy the fact that the guardians of the internet were two big whales called John and Yoko?
Right. Okay. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Right. And this is something that's interesting, is that like there are all these references that are dropped, like the social media world being called Oz. And they're not expanded upon or really explained why these names are coming there. But yeah, amazing to have John and Yoko. After the disappointment this year of a film that's been released called Drive My Car that doesn't have a single Beatles reference in it, great to watch Summer Wars, sit down and watch Summer Wars, and be surprised and delighted by a Beatles reference in there. Steph, Jake and I were clearly like vibing on the film there a little bit.
The whale of this film.
What did you make of how it all came together at the end? Did it resolve well for you?
I think that obviously there's so much going on. You know, there's kind of this big AI system that's trying to start nuclear war, that's also up against this kind of big family drama and crisis. I think the way that it's resolved, I don't think really ties up super well. I think because obviously Hosoda's linking this kind of social media thing with this big family event, their resolution kind of comes down to this like power of friendship, power of the online social media connection with everybody giving up their accounts. I don't really understand. After the card game kind of appeared, I was a little bit lost. it kind of feels like what we get with very typical like big action movies, where that final section is just kind of like brute force action to defeat whatever the problem is. And I think that setup of like AI and the internet is so intelligent in the first half, and then that kind of descent into whatever that resolution is just doesn't feel as kind of thought out or
I think
like
that's
intelligent,
like,
as the way that it's set up,
especially as you're having to say whatever that resolution is. I think that's it's very clear that there's an issue there.
I think that's a perfectly sensible kind of point to have about this film. I think we touched on this in The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, which is there's a point sometimes with these high concept stories where the third act, you know, where the rising action, where it really kind of develops this weight and gravitas and scale, it's very hard to then pull that back to resolve around personal themes sometimes. We talked about Ponyo, where it could have just been a really great hour-long movie about fish girl and little boy having an adventure. Does it need to have this end of the world tsunami aspect also? But then to mention a film like Your Name, which has huge complicated concepts around it as well, that can suddenly resolve around a key single personal moment. And maybe this is a thread again, it feels like this is something with Hosoda where he's playing with personal and massive high concepts. Can he resolve the two or fold one into the other in a way that's satisfying for the galaxy brain people like Jake and then the people with, you know, more normal brains?
Hey. On it having a bad resolution there, I think we should also highlight that as an actual ending, like the very last bit of it is just horrendous. I'm emotionally attached to these people and have really got invested in the story, and then just to end it with the kid having a god awful nosebleed and collapsing to the floor and pulling a horrendous face. I was so annoyed. Probably because I know that I would be the nosebleed kid, as I always have been throughout my life.
Jake, have you come across the visual metaphor of the nosebleed in anime before?
I've seen nosebleeds happen before, yes.
No, in life, but yeah.
I've seen it before in some other stuff. I can't place exactly.
I was just wondering whether that was the first time, because of course it's it is a trope, a cliche of the nerdy boy kid who, in a moment of anxiety or usually some sort of horniness, inappropriate horniness, has his nosebleed.
I did gather that. I just didn't want to. after seeing him smell the bathwater earlier, perhaps I didn't want to face the reality of the, this character that I've become so invested in.
I like that he's put back in his place as a kind of, yeah, a nerd by the end, even though he's done some cool stuff on the internet. It's like, just deal with this kid.
Taking you back down after, like, you get a tweet that has, like, 1K likes, and then you just need to get taken down a beg or two.
Steph, before we wrap up, any final highlights that we've not discussed? Anything you must shout out?
I think, I mean, continuing with the food corner of this series, I love the bento box that he gets on the train. That looks amazing. Would love to take a bento box on the train that looks that good. I also just loved all of the squid that they end up barbecuing later on. But when the kind of one of the relatives turns up with many boxes of what all the small kids think is like really exciting food, and each one they open, they're just like, it's all squid. Like, they're going to have a lot of squid for dinner. But yeah, I thought the food was really good.
Ah, just wonderful. Let's make Food Corner a regular thing in future episodes as well. Of course, one of the other regular segments of these mini-series is where we have to rank these films. Now we have two films to put into the Hoss order. Jake,
what, you're sounding like that's really forced. What?
Well, yes. Let's see how Summer Wars ranks alongside The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. So, two films on the Hoss order. How is this shaping up for you, Jake?
I think it's probably quite obvious for me on this one. Summer Wars is taken the top spot. It has leapt over The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. Steph?
Girl Who Leapt Through Time is leaping for me. That's actually quite far above Summer Wars for me at the moment. But yeah, I mean, maybe as we go on, I'll have greater appreciation for it down the line. But at the moment, not
Steph,
the top one.
You just need to spend way too much time on Reddit like me, and then you'll really get into what Summer Wars is really about.
I need to dig out my old DS and access Oz through it.
Michael? That makes me the deciding vote right now, as of right now. Oh, man. They're both on very level, sort of a very level pegging for me. But I think after our discussions, Summer Wars is edging ahead of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. And it has John and Yoko. So there you go.
That's always going to take it.
Our next episode, we will be talking about Wolf Children. But in the meantime, you can be keeping up with us on social media. How very apt for this episode. We're on Twitter at GhibliaTech. We're on Instagram, GhibliaTech.pod. And you can send us emails with your thoughts about Hosoda and any of the other films we're talking about in this mini-series at ghibli@little.studios.com. You can follow us individually as well. Steph is on Twitter at _StephWatts.
Jake is there at JKH Cunningham.
And Michael is there at Michael J. Leader.
Ghibliotech is a Little Dot Studios production. The show is produced by Michael Leader, Jake Cunningham, Harold McShill, and Steph Watts. Our music is by Anthony Ng, and James Payne is our editor.
Hi everyone, thanks for sticking through the credits. Now, we talked a bit about the Beatles references in Summer Wars, with the Wells being called John and Yoko, but there might be a bit more musical influence than that in the film. Screenwriter Satoki Okudera and the team actually went to a karaoke bar and looked through the song names to come up with the film's title, so have a look back through the film, there might be a few other sneaky nods to pop songs in there.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.